Hello, audience. It's Tim here from the editing desk. Today's episode is a wonderful discussion about mentoring and the kind of community and relationships that it takes to build a creative career or a sort of life orientation that doesn't necessarily have a clear path forward. And, you know, I guess the traditional vocational sense of studying to be a doctor, you become a doctor. Not all careers are like that. I'm sure many of you have fantastic stories about, you know, studying or hoping to be one thing or even starting a career in one place and ending up in a completely different place and enjoying that all the same. And this is really reflecting on how the resources and the people around us influence that path. And as part of that, we'll be talking to Jane McFarlane, the CEO of the Helpman Academy, a philanthropic organization that has put me through an incubation program some years ago now and has really shaped my career in what I have felt is intangible ways. And this discussion really unpacks that and makes the kind of ineffable qualities of that program explicit and understandable, and has been really helpful for me in just thinking about how not only do I move forward, but how I feel about sharing, I suppose, some of that knowledge and experience with other people. Now, as a creative person, I'm partly ashamed in that, you know, we do have a bit of a backlog of content in the editing folder. Look, I'm sorry about that. What we have done is pivoted to an AI editor. Now, I'm also nervous about releasing this content because it's not the same kind of editing style that and quality, I suppose, that you're used to hearing on this podcast, but it has meant that we've been able to turn around content really quickly. So please do give us feedback. Is this something that you'd like to see continuing because it means more content more regularly? Or, you know, are you as an audience happy with the kind of sporadic releasing at the quality that we have been releasing at? Was that something that's been important to you? This is a really fantastic conversation, and I'm excited to bring it to you as quickly as possible. And so I hope that you get something out of that as well, and that this is a path that we can go down. But given this is the first time we're using it, please do be patient with us. There are some kind of artifacts and things you might not be used to hearing. It may take some getting used to, but I'm confident that the value is still there. So I hope you enjoy. This is a fantastic conversation, and thanks as always for subscribing. The ultimate hidden truth of the world is that it is something that we make and could just as easily make differently. David Graeber, 1961 to 2020. Welcome to Blind Insights, a podcast we call A Haphazard Guide to Living, hosted by philosophy master David Olney and myself, a philosophy student, Tim Whiffen. I'm here with David Olney. How are you, David?
Very well, thank you, Tim. Nearly melted, but not quite.
Yeah, it's the end of a pretty solid heat wave, the last kind of heat wave that a summer in Adelaide kind of spits up before we plunge into no longer daylight savings.
Bring on the cold.
Yeah, that's it. I think that's how we're all feeling. But joining us on a rather warm evening, but we're glad to be joined by, we're joined by someone who has played a kind of pretty significant part in my story as a creative, I would say, as well as yourself, David, but you know, and just finding my feet, working, I guess, using some of my creative skills. And we're joined by Jane McFarlane, the CEO of the Helpman Academy, a philanthropic organization that empowers emerging creatives, and an organization that has personally shaped me. And I've been through their Creative Innovator program. Jane, thank you very much for joining us on the Blind Insights podcast.
Oh, thanks, Tim. So lovely to reconnect with you on your podcast.
Yeah, we've been threatening. I think we've been kind of threatening doing something like this for a while.
Oh, it's good. It's great to be on the other side while you're in action.
You get to peek behind the curtain there and all the Jane, as I've kind of mentioned there, we've known each other through the Helpman Academy's Creative Innovator Program, which I went through in 2022. We've known each other for a little while, and that helped me kick my podcasting career off the ground, I would say, with pretty significant success. Could you tell our listeners about what the Creative Innovator Program is, and maybe even a bit of a background on the Helpman Academy?
Oh, sure. So we've been going for 30 years. Helpman Academy was established 30 years ago, and we work to really empower South Australians emerging creatives to build their careers, particularly after they have come out of university and that those sort of formative 5 years. So we run a whole range of different programs. We do have a mentorship program. We do funding. We have run residencies here and all over the world. We run masterclasses. So pretty much anything and everything that is going to help artists in those formative first few years. And the Innovator program, something that I had on my wish list for a long, long time and finally got it established in 2020. So I think COVID helped me to get some funding to get it up and running. And it really... It's sort of based on a lot of the techniques from the technology sector. So where incubators and labs and those accelerator programs help to really foster business ideas. And I took a lot of those and applied it to creative industries and got this 6 month program up and running.
What kind of inspired you, I guess, to do that? Like you've sort of mentioned that you had, you know, a longstanding desire to do that. I mean, I guess you've seen a gap in the market, like probably.
Yeah. I did a degree in the, and obviously being on the other side in business, running an arts organization then, and my degree, I did film. And I was particularly interested in the business side of it and producing. And I mean, that obviously quite a few now. But everything I've had to learn on the job, you know, and so many artists are the same, where you come out and most artists end up being sole practitioners or they're in collectives. You know, they spend their years at university just focusing on their craft. But then they come out and there's all this whole world that's thrown at them around. How do you set yourselves up? What sort of business do you be? How do you, applying for ABNs and get funding and build their audience and market themselves? There's all that there's a whole other side, that artists, need to. And it's much better for the artists to empower themselves and learn these things so that they have control over their side of what they do rather than putting that in the hands of someone else. So I guess this has come out of my background in a whole range of different areas and really looked at, you know, what are all the things that someone might need to get themselves set up. So, you know, around connecting and, you know, building their networks, of obviously funding, but then also all of those skill sets that you need to get yourself up and running as well through the business, some of the workshops and things that we do. That sort of brought all of those things together into a neat little holistic 6 month package.
It's funny. Like all of those things and more. Like I think there's sort of like an ineffable part of it, I think, once you come out of it, that just is like, yeah, like it's meant, it's, you know, it is, it's learning the business side of the arts and somehow it's more like it's empowering, I think, in a kind of really intangible way. And I can say that because I've come out the other side,
yeah,
of doing that. And I think so much of university, and I'm kind of free to say this, is really shies away, especially in artistic practice, from teaching you anything about using those skills as a business. And I'm not 100% sure why. They certainly have no issue in teaching from a kind of help me with the word, when you're studying something that gets you a job specifically, and like
take, yeah, so, in terms of being job ready, put things in your CV and
and it's like the arts is like completely not vocational at all at a university level. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the life of an artist, I mean, most artists want to do their degree because they do want to set themselves up as artists in their own right. So I guess that's where we focus more on helping them to do that rather than the stats. You know, in most other jobs, if you study law, for instance, you'll go and get a job as an art, and you do your articles, and then you work your way up, or as an accountant. Whereas with artists, that path is a windier path, obviously, and they do end up being sole traders. But for me, I think most artists aren't thinking about that when they're at university. So I think it is having a program like this when you come out to help them. And generally, it's 1 or 2 years out that it tends to be the artist start thinking more about these things. Whereas at university, you really are focused just on, your arts practice.
Yeah, I wonder if that's because, there's a kind of academic study of the art, and the teacher really doesn't, sort of look like a practitioner, even if they've had that history. They certainly kind of aren't teaching as if it was their business. They're teaching as if it's for its own sake in some ways, right? And I think everyone has an idealistic version of their own artistic or creative practice that is just for its own sake. And unfortunately, I think for most of us, if not all, that's sort of not how the world works.
Yeah.
It probably takes that, 1 or 2 years of reality outside of uni to kind of realize that, I think.
Yeah.
I certainly went back and did more study and found that afterwards. So, it was exactly 2 years after I finished that I went through the Helton program. Mm.
It's really interesting that the two of you are describing that it's still, that these issues were still the case, sort of in the 2020s. Because, the student at the conservatorium in the mid-90s, watching the third-year classical, music students, realizing there might be one job in the symphony next year. There might be one part-time role, and yet there I am as the person going between the politics department and the con with an electric guitar case on a Friday because I'm going to go out and play a gig and get paid $400. And I'm going, hang on, by actually being outside the formal system, I'm kind of getting the dual education simultaneously. I'm getting all this amazing musical knowledge at the conservatorium, but I've got practical mentors, in my sort of teachers outside of the con who are saying, hey, come play in this band with me. Hey, go join this band. Hey, go record in this session. And what was really interesting is it was mentors that made sure I got the experience I need to be genuinely employable when I was playing guitar, not the system.
Mm.
So it's interesting that even then, if you had mentors, it was all going to be okay. If you didn't, it was just a question of watching, in essential, the pressure build, the stress build in people, as they realized that, there weren't going to be many doors or windows that were going to open.
Yeah.
And all this effort they've put into their creative practice ends up becoming a very unpleasant, anxiety-based pressure cooker.
Yeah, I know. I mean, when I was at university, my mentors really were, I had a couple of fantastic lecturers, who really helped guide me. So I think there's, it comes in many different forms, and not every artist is going to be a sole practitioner either. They will, some might go on and do teaching, or there's a whole range of different. So I think everyone's path is different. And I think, particularly for Helton, that's why we have so many different programs, because they are all quite unique and different, and it allows artists to dip in and dip out of them as well. And I know there's some fantastic, I just had a conversation with an artist this afternoon talking about one of the guest artists that comes into the university when they went through, and how valuable that artist has been and is now, helping to guide their career. So there's some fantastic academics as well who are playing some of those roles.
Mm. But it's about having as many kinds of mentors in as many sort of different bits of the system, or just on the edge of the system, or 1 foot in, 1 foot out, so each person can find the one they resonate with. And it sounds like that's been the great success of the Helton Academy, is going, hang on, how many flavors of exposure to the bigger world of needing to earn money can we provide that might suit different people at different times, in their early career?
Yeah, and with this program, we really sit down with the participants and talk to them about like what is it that they want to achieve. Not everyone knows exactly or come with a mentor that they necessarily. I think Tim, we talked to you through the program when you first started about what is it that you wanted to achieve, made some suggestions around some people that you could connect in with that might be able to help you with developing your practice as well. So I think that, you know, helping people, sometimes they come to us not really knowing what they want, and it's just through those conversations that we can help guide them in the right way and link them, because it is so much. Oh, no, that's okay. Go on.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I've always been someone who has enjoyed finding people to look up to, I suppose, and kind of liken myself to. But I was surprised, I guess. I had a bit of an imposter syndrome, I think, when I came into the program, because I've never really viewed myself as a creative, and I wonder how common that story is. But I felt like my little niche was going to feel like a, you know, hard to find a fit. And immediately, you know, you had so many suggestions of people that I could connect in with. And I ended up having a fantastic mentorship that was something that didn't feel necessarily relevant at the start, but it only took one meeting for me to be like, wow, no, I absolutely need this direction in my life. I think the beauty is also your network.
Yeah, sometimes it is thinking outside of the box a little bit too, because people think they have to find someone who's so specific to their practice, but it might be that it is more about, you know, the outcome of where they see themselves. Maybe it's around the audience or the, you know, the whole range of different things that people can look at in terms of getting that guidance as well. And that sometimes I think those relationships can work better too, because it means that those people can ask a lot of questions that you wouldn't have thought of as well. And I think that's so important in those relationships, that they can question you and push you and, you know, to get you to really think about what it is that you want to achieve.
I'm super interested in that, because I'm always really curious about what makes someone want to be a mentor. I suppose, especially in the kind of creative industries, it can feel really competitive. And especially if you're looking at social media or something that, you know, there's like a flurry of kind of messaging and content that more or less is just other people who are so good at what you do that it makes you almost feel legitimate. And then it's this kind of race to get to some kind of level like that. And it can be, especially with your peers at uni, it can feel really competitive, like everyone's fighting for those places. And so it's really surprising when you have someone that kind of comes into your life as a mentor and guides you to do exactly what they're doing, almost become a competitor. So I kind of want to ask each of you how, because I think you both as mentors and people that have a really strong connection to that space. And I'll start with you, David, and then we'll come to you, Jane. Just like what kind of inspires you to be a mentor like that? How do you tackle that tension, I guess, between the competition and the desire, I guess, to make an impact?
I think I was really lucky in that two of my earliest mentors were high school teachers that just believed in me. So the great thing with that is it immediately showed me that someone could be your mentor and that it wasn't about competition. They were in a different league and they didn't even know what league you wanted to be in. And that was great, because it was just like, oh, wow, people are happy to share simply because they've learned so much. And they want to leave a legacy. And their legacy is not to make mini-me's. Their legacy is to just empower people to be the most sort of, you know, flourishing version of themselves they can be. And then, you know, when I got to university, once again, at the time I went through the conservatorium, Alan Mills was there, you know, good jazz musician who'd become a teacher because he didn't want to be on the road all the time. You know, started a company growing bamboo to make reeds for woodwind instruments. So, you know, was creative in a multitude of different ways. So on the music side, once again, someone who'd made it had nothing really to prove, but was happy to share, and found the same thing in other areas of the university. Again, people who didn't want to make mini-me's, but were happy to share because they wanted to see people flourish. So really, by the time I became a mentor, you know, when I started teaching at the university and then, you know, moved into consultancy and now, you know, in the marketing world, all I've done is really applied that same logic, and that is empower the person in front of you to be the person they want to be and don't have a prescribed sense of what they need, but just offer them what you've got and see what helps.
Yeah, it feels like a sense of ignoring maybe that intuition that, you know, that what if this person undercuts, I guess, like what I'm doing. You just ignore it. Like, you just don't, it's not necessarily you don't care, but that it doesn't.
No, you just ignore it, because there are enough examples out there of people who want to create mini-me's, and you hear the stories about them pretty quick, and you very quickly realize in any area you're going into, who will only support those, you know, who are willing to become clones of them. And yeah, you just avoid that bit of whatever world you need a mentor in.
Jane, how about yourself? I suppose you've not only been a mentor, but also, like, in some ways overseen so many mentor kind of relationships. Yeah.
Yeah, for me, I just think it's part of being human is that we actually like helping each other. You know, we like, you know, like we're curious creatures, you know, and, you know, it's interesting. I worked for another organization and we ran a business mentoring program, and all of the artists and arts organizations said, look, why would these people who, you know, are partners in this legal firm or, you know, accounting, but why are they giving up their time to help us for no reason? Like, they're not getting paid, they're pro bono. And the business people, they got as much out of it as the artists and the arts organizations. You know, it helps, I think, as a mentor, it helps you to look at, it's like this conversation, it helps you to think about your own business or your own practice, and you can look at it in a different way. And so the feedback that we get is that mentors get equally, you know, get as much out of those relationships. And, you know, I think if anyone said, if someone came and asked you for help, you know, you feel flattered that you know, someone values you and your experiences, and to you know, ask you to give them some guidance. I think that what makes us human. So it's, yeah, I've never had it. Very rarely have we ever had anyone, you know, knock back. It's only generally because of time commitments and things like that people tend to say no, but it's a really, the relationships are quite beautiful to watch, you know, and often can lead to long-term, you know, friendships. I mean, look at the two of you, and, you know, everyone gets something out of it. So it's one of the joyful parts of this job.
Yeah, I suppose you're in the kind of fantastic position of, in some ways, staying in touch with all of those people and kind of hearing their feedback about how valuable the mentoring is, but also then having those connections that in some way, you know, that can later blossom into the, like, next generation as well. And
well,
it's only just, to be honest. Go for it.
I was going to say, you came back and mentored for us last year, so... You know, which is so fantastic for someone who went through the program and then came back and you know, now yourself, you know, mentoring other artists coming through. That's what it's all about.
I kind of forgot that I was a mentor there for a moment. And you know what? It was really flattering, and it was, and I took a moment after being asked, I took a night to sleep on it and consider it, and I was very sure that I had something to offer, and my mentees seemed to get a lot out of that, and I didn't for a second have an issue in sharing any of my information. So it is interesting how once you build those kind of human connections, the kind of competition element of it just slips away. It's it's almost erased. And then all of a sudden, you have mentoring relationships that, I guess, become just relationships afterward. You know, that like, yeah, like David and I, they stay for a long time. And so a core of mentoring also seems to be that community building, the long-lasting relationships that kind of come out of the teacher-student thing. I feel like creatives are a lot like children insofar as it takes a village. And, you know, we are in a lot of ways, a lot of us are kind of soul traders or whatever it might be, but it's so rarely are we alone. And I think that has been the beauty of the Eltman Academy in a way that isn't necessarily just, you know, this workshop, although the workshops are indeed so valuable. So like, how much has community been, you know, I guess, like part of the core of building that?
Yeah, the community, a lot of the feedback around the program is building that community, because we only take a dozen participants through, and part of it is that learning from each other, because that is just as important, I think, as the learning that you get from the mentors and, you know, the leaders of each of the workshops and masterclasses. And we found they end up, you know, these are the next generation of leaders that are going to come through. So they're all practitioners from different art forms. It might be a fashion designer, filmmaker, you know, someone who's come out of the conservatorium, all very different. And that's one of the great things, is that they, the sharing amongst the participants, often they've ended up working with each other, employing each other once the program's finished. You know, it really is, you know, and they come back each year. So we often they'll come back and, you know, see the next lot coming through. So it really is, such a joyous outcome of the program. And seeing, like, I bumped into one of the participants from a couple of years ago, and he's now been employed, you know, by his mentor, and he's setting up his, helping him to set up his workshop, but then he's gone on and employed another participant, you know, so that it's really, it's all of those interconnections and those little touch points that, and they're the intangible things that you don't, you know, you don't know until you've gone through how some of those things can play out.
It's almost like rebuilding the guild system, making sure that people don't feel alone when they're going, wow, I want to do this complicated thing and I don't know if I believe in myself. And all right, it's broader than the guilds, because it's not just one trade. This is about actually crossing the lines, which is now critically important, because otherwise there just aren't enough people doing one thing to be a hothouse in and of themselves. Now you need the broader hothouse of just people who are struggling to do the next thought that has to get out of their head and bring it into the world, and knowing that the people around them, that might be the only thing in common, but that is the most important thing to have in common.
Yeah, and particularly over the last few years, you know, and that's why it was so great for us to launch this program, you know, with COVID, because I think, oh my, you know, imagine going through the conservatorium, for instance, you know, studying music for 3 or 4 years and then coming out and there's no gigs. You know, there's nowhere to go and meet people and build those communities. So having somewhere that people, you know, can go and you know, think about, you know, what it is that they want to do and you know, where they want to take their careers has been just, really, but really valuable for them, and to build, you know, to build that community amongst themselves.
It feels like such a fantastic, like, distillation, an example of, you know, if you can't see it, you can't be it, which is used in a lot of different kind of contexts, but I think makes a lot of sense in this one, which is, it's so often, we're coming back to the start, you know, it does take those 1 or 2 years out of uni to kind of realize, I actually am not 100% sure what I'm doing. Because, you know, I kind of wonder how it all starts. Like, has this always been the way, do you think? Like people just sort of work it out by funneling together? Is that what you mean by rebuilding the guild, David?
Yeah, that's essentially what I meant by it, is that, you know, historically people have more time and they have more people around them. So what I was thinking is, you're talking, one of the ultimate ironies now is in most cases people have to get through a degree before they then get to be an early career person. But part of the bizarre thing with the degree is even though you're meant to be learning your practice, you're getting given grades for it. So your why is perverted for that period of time to sort of a double-sided why. There is the why because this thing makes me happy and this thing is a profound way to communicate. But there's also the why of, but I need that scholarship money because it will give me another year to work out a bigger why than getting the scholarship. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the degree, what I noticed in my cohort from the con, a very long time ago, is that holy crap moment. There's no point doing the practice just to get a high mark. So why are you playing 6 hours a day? So you're going to go on the competition circuit. And again, you go, Tim.
Yeah, I was about to say, is there ever a cause to play, 6 hours a day? But then you answered it. So,
oh, there absolutely is. But that's what you have to work out at the end of the degree. Because, again, you can see it's really interesting with classical musicians, the ones who go on the competition circuit. They're the ones who very often can go, hang on, I can deal with these two whys. There's the why of, playing chamber music here with people I know for audiences I know. But there's also the why of pushing myself for that award or that prize. Because, well, I've had 12 years of doing that to get here. So it's an interesting transition at the end of the formal study phase of any creative process to go, all right, what's my why? Because the why until now has been to often get the opportunity to continue developing, but always with this thing hanging over your head of a sword that says, have you done well enough objectively to be given another year of money or a next opportunity? So a transition to actually, what's your why? What's your why as a human who has to interact with other humans, who needs to eat, who needs to earn? But the why, is to stabilize at the end of the degree. And having the ability to find mentors who are already the other side and go, hang on, yep, we got to do things to earn money, but also we got to know why we're getting up and doing the thing in the first place. So having the clarity of people who are more years down that process of understanding their why and understanding that your why can exist in a fairly hostile environment without enough resources and enough support, you can still want to go on and still do amazing things. And anytime there's more support, that's better. But the most remarkable thing I remember about the musicians who mentored me was most of them had had almost no support other than some older musician who just decided to make sure they didn't fall flat on their face.
So I'm wondering, I feel like I left uni with a why that didn't necessarily make financial sense. Let's put it that way. Like, it wasn't ever going to earn me a living. I think I probably had way too much passion, way too much idealism laid into it. And that's where kind of Help My Academy helped me funnel that into something that was into a
career. Okay, I'm going to reframe that.
Yeah, sure.
You didn't have too much passion or too much idealism. You didn't have enough of the practical how.
Right.
To balance out your why.
Okay.
And that's mentoring seemed to give you in spades. Like, how do I actually do this? How do I actually get a job? How do I do what I do well so I can take pride in it as a creator? But how do I also do what I do well so that I can earn coin of the realm and have time to think and ponder and wonder what the next project is rather than endlessly hustling and not having time to think about how to do things the way you want? Again, how can you know what the big bad world of getting a job in a limited size pond is until you do it? And then you discover that a limited size pond is still a fairly hostile environment to find your space in. There's big snapping turtles and there's quicksand and there's a bit of a toxic waste dump over in the corner where something went wrong, Well, the pond is not a safe place to explore without, elder pond dwellers.
True. So I've had a pretty interesting career post this program, right? Like, I've managed to I was working for myself and that supported my lifestyle getting here. That was things like helping me get into a house and get married and all those wonderful things, and still trying to pursue my artistic career at the same time, which is a pretty privileged position to be in. Like, let's just call that, like, for what it is, which is sort of miraculous. And then, at the end of the program, ending up in some kind of being employed in, I guess, an industry that I really wanted to work in, and probably the only position to do that in all of Adelaide. And I did that through networks made through the program. So that's also miraculous. For your context, Jane, I've left that and I'm doing something almost completely different. And I wouldn't have been there had not all the previous things happened. So it's like, you know, while I'm not doing anything close to how I started, because I wanted to do one thing, but I didn't know how to make that work. And realistically, it's because it was that wasn't a path, and I was directed down a legitimate path, and then I ended up through a series of forks somewhere completely different. How common of a story is that for the people that go through these programs? Look at the weird and wonderful places that they end up. I would just do you have any kind of anecdotes?
Well, someone I know, their favorite saying is luck is when preparation meets opportunity. And you know, and I think that says, you know, a lot about, you know, you say you know, how fortunate you are, but what you've done is actually gone, this is what I want to achieve. I'm going to put in the hard work. You know, you had the opportunity, you know, to meet some people to help you along the way. But that to me is what this program so much is all about. Like, you've actually put yourself out there, you have to put in the hard work. And I think, you know, as someone who did, you know, go through art school, I think a lot of us, you know, at the end of the art school, we're all kind of wide-eyed and think, oh, I'm going to get out and, you know, there are going to be all these opportunities that are thrown at me. And you get out into the world and you think, actually, I'm going to have to hustle, you know. And, you know, each path is very different. I know Scott Hicks, the director, said to me that when he was at university, that if someone was going to vote most likely to succeed out of film school, he said, oh, he would have been very low on the list. But you know, when he got out, he just threw himself out there and knocked on doors and essentially hustled, which is what, you know, a lot of this is, you know, in terms of how to pitch and it is that belief in yourself. You know, we all have imposter syndrome. You know, a lot of artists feel that they're not good enough. So it is, you know, the thing that I do love about this is actually bringing a lot of people together, and people go, actually, I'm no different to this other person sitting next to me. We're all the same. Like, no one's more special than the other, but it's actually learning the skills. And this, I guess it is that roadmap of, this is where I want to get to. What do I need to get there? What do I need to do? What are the connections I need to make? You know, what are the skills? You know, all of those things. And it's bringing all of that together and working hard, which is what you've done.
And fake it until you make it is totally legit.
Absolutely.
That's what everyone's doing, right?
Yeah. My classic version of, yeah, we never stop. Because once you start, you realize, hang on, how do you do the next thing? You have just enough of a toehold to convince people to let you have a foothold. And then from a foothold, you get a knee on there, and by that point, you get the other toe on there. But, you know, it's that whole thing. Chance is what happens. Luck is what you do with it. So when you were using the word miraculous, I'm sitting here very quietly wanting to scream, going, no, there's nothing miraculous about it. Chance is what happened. Luck is what you do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because miraculous is forgetting to fake it until you make it. It's like, oh, it's a miracle. No, it's not.
That's true.
You just got to fake it effectively till you get there. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Some of my peers going through that program that have then gone on to do like stage performance all across America. Mm. And that isn't necessarily how they started, right? But certainly that, you know, they were put on a path to do that and you know, full time do the thing that they wanted to do. So it's super interesting how the program is absolutely a journey. Like, and I remember that being told to us at the start, like, you will probably by the end may like be doing a completely different thing to what you think you would be doing at the start and what you pitch yourself doing at the start. It seems like, would you agree that that's more often than not that people are doing something completely different by then?
I'd say it's probably 50-50. Okay. It seems like once they go through, and that's okay. I mean, that's life, you know, and that's the whole point of the program, I guess, is that you don't have to have something set in stone. And as you go through it, you might realize, actually, you know, I've got a better idea or something. I mean, some people come with a very clear idea and they've gone through the program and they've been incredibly successful, you know, and they've you know, gone and now, yeah, their business is set up and running. Others, as they go through, you know, because we allow people to come in who don't necessarily have a, you know, 100% vision as well about what they want to achieve. You know, because these are people straight out of university. So, I mean, I had no idea what I wanted to do, you know, straight out of university. So, yeah, so it's probably half and half, which is absolutely fine. But I think about 90% of the participants are working full time in their practice, so which is fantastic.
That is amazing. I mean, universities can't say that.
No, that is a huge number. That's something you would expect in in medicine and computer systems engineering and almost nowhere else.
Well, for an art practice, we're absolutely thrilled. It's very resource intensive, but so worth it.
Yeah, of course. So you've recently, I think, just expanded the eligibility and I guess like allowed people that extra time to kind of move to something else and come back.
Yeah, so most of our programs are 5 years out of university, but because this particular program, as I said, sometimes you kind of need to be out of university a few years before you realize, you know, what it is in terms of setting up a business. So we've expanded 7 years out of university to be able to participate in the program, which is great.
I mean, realistically, the thing that I directly studied to me getting there, I think it was about, so 3 years it would have been. So yeah, like that. I mean, and it easily could have been more. I mean, if I look at when I started uni, it was a full 7 years, if that makes sense. Mm. So when I started that course, this was 7 years after that. So like, I think everyone needs that time. I mean, that's enough time to kind of go and work full time for 2 years and then work out you don't even like that thing. Like, I mean, and still have plenty of time left. So I'm super stoked about you opening that up, because I just think that's just going to raise, I think, probably even the caliber a little bit more. You know, people with a bit of life experience being joined by people who have just come straight out of uni, and putting those people in a cohort together is like, we'll have interesting results as well. I'm just stoked that you continue to do it. Totally.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, I feel a little selfish because this has been a really amazing exploration, I think, of what it is about this program that has changed my life, because I've just been able to sort of really diffusely say that I have thoroughly enjoyed it and I would recommend it to anyone. So, Jane, is there anything, I guess, that you wished we had asked about this? Is there anything that I guess that you wanted to say at the end?
I guess, as you said, like, you know, at the beginning, it is a village, you know, that raises our artists, and program was supported by so many people. Like, we get a lot of philanthropic support put on the program, as well as government through Arts Australia, and we have these mentors that do all pro bono support for the program as well. So the thing that I love about it is that it is a combination of all those people that have come together, because they do really believe future of the arts in this state, and it's so fantastic that we have such a passionate network through our business advisors, through Perks and the state government, and all of our philanthropic supporters who come together to do this. It's a joy.
Well, I think that is the best thing, about it at the end of the day, is obviously there's an application process, but this is, it's effectively a scholarship, right? I guess, you know, you could kind of call it that.
Hmm. It's completely free, and and everyone gets some of seed funding at the end of the program as well. It's great.
It helped kickstart you, whatever you do next, which is fantastic. And I mean, I've just got to say, like, thank you so much for putting this program on. I know that quite a lot of our audience has some form of artistic practice, even if it isn't their main thing. I believe that a lot of us would have some kind of artistic, you know, we would you know, a lot of, even if it's just like sort of like a knitting thing or whatever it might be, we talk, David and I talk a lot about following our passions and kind of the extracurricular sense. But I mean, if there are any of you out there that are kind of taking that, or have considered taking that to another level, and you've studied something in the kind of arts or humanities space, which again describes quite a bit of our audience, and that's only in 7 years into your past, I would strongly encourage you to head to the Helpman Academy website, which I don't have in front of me. Do you mind?
Helpmanacademy.com.au. But I just check your eligibility. We do have a page on there to check your eligibility before you look to apply for any of the programs.
Amazing. Thank you very much, Jane McFarlane, for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
And thank you, David.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Jane. And thank you, listeners.
Thank you for listening to Blind Insights. If the ideas of this episode have inspired you, please consider subscribing and sharing with your friends. Do them a favour so we can make a better informed and connected world.